call the meeting to order, and I'd like to welcome everybody that, I know a lot of you drove a lot of miles to get here, and I really appreciate that you did that. We always like public people from the public to come and give us comments, and if they have questions or anything like that, we really like that. I'm going to ask one of my fellow board members to read through the agenda for me.
Okay.
All right, Daryl.
We start with our welcome, as our chairperson just did that. We'll have introductions. We'll talk about lunch, public meeting comments, recording of meetings and such. Then we'll approve the minutes of the 2009 meeting from May 2nd. And then we'll move into our focus topic, supported employment. At 10:15, we have public comment. 10:25 is a break. 10:35, we have a report from the chairman. 10:45, report from the executive director. 11:05, we have public comment. We move to old business after that. 11:15, budget update. 11:25, NIS update. 11:30, NFB news line update. 11:35, client assistance program, CAP, complaints or issues. At new business at 11:40, report from committee regarding attending advocacy group conventions. 11:50, executive director's goals for the next fiscal year. At 12 o'clock, we have a lunch break. It says on your own. I don't know if that has been changed.
Yeah, I think we're going to change that.
Okay. You'll talk about that here in a second. 1 o'clock, discussion of the second staff survey comments and those sent by virtual suggestion box. 1:30, election of officers of the commission board. 1:40, discussion of recommendation of the auditors for more review of the budget by commissioners. 2 o'clock, focus topics for next meeting, November 21st, 2009, in Lincoln. The topic is business enterprise and vendors. February 2010, time to be decided. Will be that next meeting will be in Omaha, and we will have presentations about the deaf-blind project. Other topics for consideration for future meetings we talked about was field services or how staff work with individuals in the field. 2:05, we'll have public comment. 2:15, final announcements. 2:20 is our scheduled adjourn time.
Yes, scheduled. That's let's dwell on that.
Right.
Okay, now for the next part, some of the logistics. I know that over there to my right along that wall are, and I assume most people have found coffee and waters down there. We also have the open public meeting laws and statutes over there in Braille and in print, so that people, if you feel that we're not doing this correctly, you can go check the rules and that kind of thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure about, I know the bathrooms are very close. Kathy,
actually,
do you?
The women's restroom, I don't believe, is very close.
No.
It isn't very close.
There is a closer one. When you go out and turn left and walk straight, you'll get to some glass doors, and it's just past the glass door.
Is that the one that you went to?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the men's is right out here. That's
right.
Why I was saying.
Okay. That's still
or Dan, the women could use the men's, okay, too, for all I care. So.
Oh.
Well, hey, you got to go.
Okay. So now the public meeting, the tape is running, correct?
Oh, yes, sorry. I needed to check with Dan. And Kathy, I'm assuming, is ready?
Yes.
Okay. So now, just for my clarification, to go out to the left and through the glass doors, and then is it on the left?
On the right.
On
immediately
the right.
On the right.
Immediately
after
on the right.
Doors.
Okay. Okay, if you have any questions, just ask your neighbors and hopefully they'll know. Let's see, lunch arrangements. What, Kathy, do you know what we're doing about that yet, or?
We were gonna check with Dan and,
He's not here yet?
He's out of the room. Dan Hill.
Okay.
He's here, but he stepped out of the room.
Okay.
There are folks who live here in Scotts Bluff. Some of you live here in Scotts?
Yes.
Okay, if you don't mind me.
Sure, please do.
We'd like to, have something delivered that could not, you know, not a one meal for each person, but something like either pizza or Subways or something that we could all enjoy. And we wondered if you have a suggestion for a local place that would deliver and that you think would be good. Any ideas?
Well, probably Subway or any of the pizzas or Runza. You know, I think they all deliver.
Okay.
What pizza establishments do you have?
We have Pizza Hut and we have, oh, was just there last night, Godfather's.
Okay.
And there is others, I think, too, but.
Okay, so would the.
Whatever you
be
like.
Okay with the one of the pizza places? I don't have a particular preference.
That'd be the easiest, either one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't, well, okay, let's.
Wherever you can get
pizza
the best deal.
Yeah, wherever
yeah.
you can get a good deal or wherever you can get, you know, maybe closeness might have mm-hmm. come
well,
into
play. Well, if they're going to deliver.
Well, this
probably,
is true, we don't,
yeah,
that's
it
true.
Doesn't really matter where they
okay,
are.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave that up. I know Kathy's busy, let's see. Is there somebody else we could?
I would suggest after the focus topic,
yeah.
Dan just walked back into the room, that we volunteer Dan Hill.
That's what you get, Dan, for walking back in the room.
Welcome, Dan.
we'll just ask you to go order some pizza to be delivered for lunch. And you need to stay while we're having the focus topic, but when that's done, if you wouldn't mind doing that.
Okay.
Thank you.
We would appreciate that, Dan, very much. It would facilitate things. We have scheduled an hour lunch, but if we could have something delivered, we might be able to do lunch in a half an hour. And you know, all of us have a long way to travel, and some of us are leaving yet this afternoon, so it would be good if we could do that. Okay, and did I miss any other announcements that I should be making? I can't think of anything right off.
I don't think
so. Okay, then we need to approve the minutes of the May.
Introductions.
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. I knew I was missing something. Yes, we'll do introductions. I think we'll start with Pearl, and we'll go around the table of the board, and then you guys out there in the public, we want to know who you are, too. So we'll do the front table, and then we'll do the rest of everybody out there. So start
okay.
with Pearl.
I'm Pearl Van Zandt, Director of the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and I'm from Lincoln.
I'm Jimmy Urach, and I'm on the board representing the American Council of the Blind in Nebraska from Omaha.
Julie Johnson, I'm the Vice Chairperson for the board, and I'm from York.
And I'm Nancy Altman, I'm from Hastings, and I right now I'm the Chairman of the board.
Carol Jenkins, National Federation of the Blind designee, and I am from Lincoln.
Daryl Walla, I'm on the Board of Commissioners and at-large member.
I'm Kathy Stevens, I'm with the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Lincoln.
I'm Dan Bird, I'm a driver from Omaha, Nebraska.
And Dan is doing our
recording
today. Okay, so where do we need
Dan, could you walk the hand mic around to the folks? Thank you.
And could you please spell your names for me, too, please?
My name?
Your name and spell it, please.
Oh, okay. My name is Rosa Gellert, G-E-H-L-E-R-T. I'm here from Scotts Bluff.
I'm gearing, as yet. She's in Heritage Manor, as yet. She had a broken neck, and so she's recuperating. I'm Carol Goranson. It's G-O-R-A-N-S-O-N. I live here in Scotts Bluff.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Would you re-spell your name again?
G-O-R-A-N-S-O-N. Three simple little words. Go, Ranson.
I'm Dan Hill, and I'm a rehab counselor here with the Commission for the Blind here in Scotts Bluff.
I'm Frank Hone. Last name spelled H-O-H-N, and I am from Hemmingford. And I'm still the guy that everyone wants to forget.
I'm Karen Lemon, L-E-M-M-O-N, and I am from Whitney, Nebraska, and here just to get more of a handle on what you guys do, because you've been so good to me.
I'm Carolyn Schaefer from Chadron, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R.
Thank you all very much for coming.
And my husband, Tim Lemon, is here too, but he's not in the room at the moment. He's our driver.
Okay. Thank you.
We need his name on the list of people too. Well, we are, as Pearl said, we are really glad that you guys came, and I know you all, sounds like, came from a distance, and we came from a distance too, but we're glad you're here, and we're here, and we can get a better handle. And one of the things I did forget to say, on the agenda you will notice that there are areas that say public comment. That's you guys' turn. If the board members have questions of people that do the focus topics and other things, that's our turn so that we can ask questions and get answers. But when we get to the public comment time, that's you guys' time, and you can ask us questions about anything that's been said. Any other questions you might have, they don't have to pertain. But if you have some questions that you want to know about the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, please feel free at that time. But we limit that so that things don't get real congestion. We have our times and then your times. And I'm, as the board will tell you, I'm very lenient on public comment time. I have it listed as 10 minutes, but you guys have lots of questions. I'm very lenient as far as that goes. So we will, you know, listen to what you have to say. If you have a comment, questions, whatever. So,
Nancy, can I add one thing real quick?
Sure.
If people need to leave and you have a burning desire to say something, scream, holler, get our attention, and we'll make sure we get you in.
Exactly. Jim's exactly right. If, you know, for whatever reason, you guys need to say if you, we sure hope you'll stay for the whole meeting, but if you have to leave at noon or at, you know, 11:30 or whatever time, and you really have a question you'd like to tell us or something you'd like to tell us, I'm lenient about that too. I will let you speak even during our time, because I know when you come from a long distance, and even if you don't, people have schedules, and so we want to listen. That's why we make the effort to go all parts of the state, so that we get to listen from consumers all over the state. So with that said, we will go to the approving of the minutes of the May 2nd meeting. Are there any things or comments that the board has to say about that, or anything that I think we pretty much got all of our changes in and corrections and so forth. And the minutes are on our website, so and you know they're archived too, so that you can go back to any minutes that you'd like to read.
Move for approval.
Okay.
Second.
All right. We have a motion to approve the minutes and a second. And I need to do a roll call. So Jim.
I'm in favor of it.
Julie?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Daryl?
Yes.
And I agree, and so it's unanimous that the minutes are approved. Okay. The next item is the focus topic for today, and it's supported employment, and I'm assuming Dan Hill's in charge of that, so I'll just let you guys take the floor and talk to us about supported employment.
Well, I think actually Pearl's going to, I'm assuming, begin this.
All right, Pearl, I stand corrected.
Sure.
Okay, Pearl.
This, Bob Deaton is our, Bob Deaton is Deputy Director of the Agency for Independent Living Services. But he also has a lot of experience as a voc rehab counselor in the past, working with supported employment. So he's very knowledgeable, and he has continued to be our point person for training on supported employment and answering questions counselors have. Supported employment, so Bob sent out a fact sheet and some information to the board, which normally in the meetings themselves we don't go through the detail of information sent out, but we get into discussion more about it. But basically it's a way that individuals that cannot function in a job completely on their own are able to work successfully with a job coach, and it has a lot of details about how it's funded, how it's structured, and so on. But it's really a good way for folks that otherwise would not be able to have jobs in the community to be able to be part of the workforce. And so as it turned out, Bob would have been here but ended up having an alumni reunion this weekend that he really wanted to be at. So he did the preparation for it and sent that information out. And then Dan did some discussion with some folks to, I think, at least one employer and an individual or two that work in supported employment. And so he may answer questions specific to the area or tell us some information about his experience with it. But the way that we usually start is just to see if the board did receive the information, if you have questions or aspects of it that you would like to discuss. I'll answer what I can.
I think Bob did a really nice job, as usual. I mean, we kind of expected out of Bob that he does, not that, you know, all the focus topics are always, you know, really well supported and good information ahead of time, but I was quite impressed with how many areas all over the state that there are, and there's opportunities for people all over. And some of the terms and stuff that Bob discussed, they were really, really well done too. I mean, they just gave us really good information. I'm not sure that I have questions. The rest of the board here?
I don't at this point.
No.
I
know. You have questions, Julie?
I always have questions.
That's okay. Good. Yeah, we always appreciate if somebody has something.
Julie is inquisitive.
thanks, Jim. I guess I was really surprised by a couple of things, that if a person only needs a job coach for a limited amount of time, that they wouldn't necessarily be in supported employment.
Right.
I guess I thought it was more liberally used, I guess, than it is. And then I guess from that, I'm wondering what criteria are used to identify people for supported employment.
Okay. That is kind of an interesting aspect of what supported employment is. And of course, this all comes from the federal and the national program. So it is very rigidly established. But it seems to me like you don't know if someone absolutely will always need a job coach until some years down the line, perhaps. And so when the way we approach it is that if it looks to be that a job coach on an ongoing basis is likely to be needed for whatever reason, sometimes it's head injury, sometimes it's developmental disabilities that cause multiple issues for the person, we proceed with that this is likely a supported employment, and then we go ahead and provide the services to them. If they're developmental disability, we work, as this information said, with the folks in that part of Health and Human Services to do the work to... certain things have to be done for it to be carried on going after our support ends. And we can only support to a certain point, and then the Health and Human Services takes over. So that has to all be put in place. But I would rather go ahead and get someone started, get the initial training and perhaps the initial job coach employment started, and if it turns out they really don't need it after all, then that's fine. They can go off of supported employment. But we don't, you know, you can't have proof that something will always have to be in place because we don't know the future. I don't know if that answers, but it is a little tricky sometimes. You know, how do we know they'll always need something? Well, you know, if you look at the basic, what are the disabilities, what are the multiple conditions that they have that are likely to cause this need, and we kind of go from there.
And didn't Bob say in there that, you know, if there is you assume that they're going to need a work coach for a long period of time, or for, you know, the rest of their life, or as long as they work. But he also said that if for whatever reason that, you know, that doesn't happen and they really don't need that coach, that they really are able to function on their own, that the money has, you know, already been spent and there's not going to be, you know, some kind of, I can't think of the word, but it's your penalty,
right,
for doing that, because you had to assume in this particular case that that probably was going to happen.
Right.
And you do want to start them, you know, if the, you know, they're able to work and they're whatever, but yeah, which I thought was, you know, pretty good idea. I mean, you know, if that works without a penalty, if there was a penalty there, that would really make it even.
Right. No, I'm not, don't get me wrong, we don't just use these funds just to get anybody started in a job, because a lot of people and a lot of kinds of jobs, there's no need for a job coach. There may be a need for a rehab counselor or a technology person to go to the work site and do an assessment of the tasks and see what things need to be done in a non-visual way and kind of work through that whole business. I know Dan can speak to that. So most people don't need a job coach, but there's nothing wrong with, you know, if the person needs a job coach, it's a perfectly legitimate approach. And so, and I should also mention the amount of funds are very minimal. It's $30,000 a year. It's been that way for maybe 20 years. Never has increased at all. And some of the cases can be quite expensive if you really get into full-time job coach expenses. So it's not like there is very much money here. But the need is also limited. You know, there aren't that many people that do need it. So it's a really important program for those who need it. Some years we end up not spending very much at all. Right now we're toward the end of, well, the federal year ends at the end of September. So right now we're in federal year 2009. We've just completed spending the carryover from 2008. Wow. So we still have funds for 2009, which then we can use in 2010. So, and other years, we, you know, use it up pretty quickly. It varies.
Okay, that was one of my questions, if it was able to be carried over, and you just answered that.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I have, you know, it said like 18 months, and then it transfers over to some other department to be, how many people, I shouldn't say how many people, but, your perception of whatever percentage it was, use the whole 18 months, or is it more common that, you know, maybe they need 6 months or maybe, 12 months?
It seems to me that when it ends early, it's usually not because they don't need the job coach any longer, but rather because they have become ill and aren't able to continue to work, or there are other factors that they withdraw from the job or the workforce.
Okay.
And many of the folks do have multiple disabilities, so that's, now that's not a, I can't tell you that's a statistically valid answer to your question, but that's what it seems to me is generally the case.
Okay.
What happens if the money runs out and they still need support? Does it come from another fund?
We could provide it. We could pay for it with basic support funds. That's the voc rehab part of the grant. Actually, supported employment, while it has its own funding, they're still served as a vocational rehabilitation client. And so it's within the purposes and regulations of the vocational rehabilitation grant, but it just has its own little funding. I don't think we ever have completely used the funds to the point where you're suggesting, where then we
have a backup.
Right.
Okay. So the funds have never been, oh, that's interesting.
Not to my recollection.
Mm, okay.
So
it's not a common need then.
Right.
Is that, excuse me, Julie.
No, you're fine.
I wondered if that's because there, obviously I know there are probably more people out there that you think that's because they don't know about the opportunity, or you think it's because they really not able to take on any job, or there's nothing that in an area that they would be able to do?
I would like to think it's mostly because it's a low incidence population and not because we're not serving the people who are out.
They imply that.
Yeah. Dan, do you have any thoughts about that? And let's get the mic to Dan and just keep it there, Dan, and throughout the discussion, if you would. Thank you.
Okay. Typically out here, I think we're in pretty close contact with the school systems. So if there's any kids, even young kids, I'm working with a little 5-year-old right now who, once he reaches that stage, would be involved in supported employment. Another one that is 17 who also, I've been working with since he's been involved in the school system. And probably at age 21 will be involved with what's called Office of Human Development, or what is it? OHD. Office of Human Development. I always go by OHD. I never think of what do those acronyms mean. But they are the service out here in the Panhandle that provides the job coach service. And I've been successful, we've been successful in seeing OHD provide the majority of the funding for job coaching. So we haven't had to expend much money from as far as the commission is concerned for that particular purpose. So it helps if you have good working relationships and they're willing to work in a cooperative manner. The other thing is that we will work also with whoever the job coach is, as well as the staff at OHD, to make sure they have a relatively good understanding of blindness, alternative techniques, that type of thing. And most of the time, I always go in with the job coach and the client
as the client is learning the job duties. So, you know, that way then the job coach sees, okay, these are the types of techniques that he or she needs to apply in order to be able to carry out those job duties. Mm-hmm. So I'm working, in fact, I just closed a man in his 30s who has been supported employment. OHD provided the job coaching and intermittently they check in with him on a weekly basis. And if there's need for any kind of job coaching, then they're available. In addition, when he first contacted us, he was doing just dishwashing only at Runza, and this is in Sydney. And his desire was to enhance or increase his job duties. So now he's doing a variety of additional duties. He's carrying out orders to the customers. He's doing the trash. He's doing cleaning the tables. He's slicing and dicing the cabbage and the vegetables and, you know, just a variety of additional types of job duties. And he's multiple handicapped. He's mildly mentally handicapped as well as has CP, cerebral palsy on one side, and then the vision loss. But he's eager and has been successful in carrying out that job. So
that's a great example.
The kind of thing that I just enjoy hearing so much.
Really,
that
nice.
People don't want to just sit at home. They really want to be out there, you know, doing things. That's true.
And he is motivated. That was the big part of it, to see this be successful. I mean, if it was just being forced on him, I don't think it would have worked.
No.
But, you know, he had the desire, the ambition, and he took the initiative to contact the commission, he and his mother, actually. But he lives alone in his own apartment or in his own house, actually. So he's independent in that regard, too.
Oh, that's super.
Neat.
So I've got another one if you want to hear about it, but
yes, you probably have other time.
Or other things to deal with.
No,
but,
no. You want to hear it.
I'm working with another young man that's, I think he's 26. And he's up in the Shadron area. And he, too, has multiple handicaps. He's mildly mentally handicapped. He has retinitis pigmentosa. He's actually at a point of legal blindness at this point. He has a syndrome which they have no name for because it's so rare. And, you know, I just kind of jotted down a few of the characteristics of this particular syndrome. And he has a severe speech impediment, so it requires a communication device, which he uses in order to communicate. He's slow in using it. He has... Poor grammar skills, speech skills, so, you know, sometimes you pick it up, sometimes you don't. And his parents are really about the only folks that really are able to understand him. I'm getting better, but I've worked with him, too, for several years. So you kind of struggle at times with that. He has a low muscle tone, so he's not got much strength at all in his entire body. His balance is somewhat poor, so he's got a number of things going on there, but also at the same time he is a motivated young man, and he's living in Shadron right now in his own apartment. His parents live out on a ranch, and they were hoping to be here today, but they had too many ranch responsibilities mm-hmm. going on and county fair happening this week, so
yeah.
There's a lot of things happening at this time mm-hmm. of the year. But I've worked with him a lot on home teaching, cane travel in particular, cooking alternatives, independent living kinds of things, so he's able to now be in that situation of living in his own home or own apartment. He is currently involved with the OHD workshop in Shadron, but we've been putting pressure on them, so he's now also working outside of the workshop in a couple of different places. He's not particularly what he wants to do, but it's giving him some work experience. He's working at a couple of motels where he is tearing down the beds and remaking them. He, spends 2 hours a day doing that. He spends another hour to 2 hours a day doing vacuuming of different apartment complexes in the community. His particular desire at this point is to do stocking of shelves. And I think he can do it because he was doing it in Alliance when he was just shortly out of high school. I was successful in getting him into a position at a grocery store in Alliance stocking shelves. But unfortunately, the grocery store closed their doors, so that kind of eliminated the job and some frustration, too. But we're hoping that we can find something. We're pushing OHD. They're kind of dragging their feet on, you know, making some employer contacts on his behalf. But we're working together, and I think we'll make progress. He's only been in the workshop about 3 months. So, you know, I suppose they have their guidelines to follow as well, you know, monitor and make sure he's going to be a capable person for being out in the community. So,
Dan, unless I miss something, OHD is not a government agency, is it?
They receive government funds. I don't know, and they have government vehicles, so they must be government funded.
Well, I didn't know. I must have.
Well, yeah, and I don't know exactly
that part, but
where they fit in there, Jim, as far as funding, if it's the same as. Is it Developmental Disabilities Division or whatever?
I was department? Wondering. And the Region 1 Office of Human Development. Right. That's what it. So the regional entities, that's a part of State Health and Human Services.
Okay,
yeah,
so
that would be.
So the state, okay.
I'm looking at the provider list that Bob sent.
That's a good place to look.
Yeah, if they get state holidays off to them, it has to be state. So,
I have a question.
Okay,
I can
Carol.
Ask. I'm curious, like, people who are in supported employment, like, how often are, like, cases closed successfully? And, you know, if they're not successful closures, I mean, are they closed or how exactly? Because you said you had one case you closed successfully with the first story.
Right.
So now I'm curious, because you answered my question that they are closed, so now I'm really wondering.
I haven't worked with that many supported employment out here in Scotts Bluff. In fact, the one that I closed, I think, was the first one that I'd worked with at the adult level. Anthony, who is the other young man I was talking about with the multiple thing disabilities, I'm sure we'll be successful with that one. It's just, you know, a matter of finding the right match. He's motivated. He's got he's got a personality that just fits in wonderfully in the community. It's unfortunate he's not able to communicate as well as he'd like to be able to, and as I'd like to see him be able to, because, you know, there's frustration on everybody's part at times when it comes to trying to communicate. And like I said, even though he has a device, a communication device, he's really slow, and you know, coordination is another issue. So finding those keys and hitting them is another issue. Spelling, sentence structure, you know, just all of that, and that's part of the being mentally handicapped too, of course. So. It would seem like he's got a lot of strikes against him, but he's a pretty strong kid and not a kid, he's 20s. But you know,
like,
I think he'll succeed. Yeah, to me too.
Last week, so.
I'd like to comment on that also.
Okay.
One of the things with the supported employment clients is that we tend to serve them for a long time, over a lot of years, and so. It's you know, when the case lasts for years, you don't have as frequent of actual closures, either successful or unsuccessful. And, for example, in 2008, we served 14 people in the supported employment program. And throughout that entire year, none of them was closed for either an unsuccessful or successful reasons. So that's part of it. And the numbers we serve are small, obviously 14 in a whole year. Those all had been active at the beginning of 2008 and were still active in at the end of 2008. We're in 09 now. I don't know for sure if, I believe most of the current caseload is that same group. I couldn't swear to that. But so, you know, it's a group, and Dan's given some good examples of why it takes a long time and what work has to be done and, you know, how that works.
So if they're inactive, like, for example, like if they couldn't do the job for illnesses or what reason, like, does the commission still provide services to them?
It depends. If there's something that they need, we would, that would be related toward working toward their employment goal eventually. If, let's say, health issues rear up and they really are not going to be going for employment, but they still need some cane travel instruction or some instruction to stay independent in their homes, we could close their voc rehab case and open them as an independent living client. So it would depend on the person. If there's something we can provide, we'll work with them.
I have kind of a maybe not blind related question, but I'm curious about that device you were talking about that helps people understand them, only because we have a gentleman that belongs to my church. He's in his 30s. He had a severe head injury when he was a teenager. He was in a coma for a very long time. And one of his frustrations is that, you know, he really can, you know, answer questions and communicate with you, except that his speech is really hard to, you know, to understand. But he will do things like, if you don't understand what he said, he'll try to spell it out for you, or he'll try to, you know, give a different example so you can get it. I mean, he's taken frustration to a point where he tries to really harder to understand that you're not getting what he's saying, and you really do want to understand what he's saying. So I don't know how much, but I was just curious about that device. Is that, and he lives in a group home setting. He does work, and so I'm just curious. Is that kind of a device open to a wide variety of people, or is that something that would be good for him to use?
I would think that it'd be worth investigating if he were to explore the AT for All website.
Okay.
And it's AT and the number 4 All. They have at least 2, 3, maybe 4 different communication devices, like I was talking about. The Dynavox is the one that Anthony uses presently, but that thing is, who knows how heavy that thing is. You know, it's like we're carrying a backpack around. It's so darn heavy. So right now we're exploring, there are more devices out there, and they're a lot more portable than the Dynavox, and that is something that Anthony is doing right now, is experimenting with a couple of other devices that are available through AT for All.
Okay.
So that would be my suggestion.
Okay, I will suggest that to some people and see, you know, if there's anything there that might work for him, because he really does enjoy talking to people, and you know, once in a while it gets frustrating, but he really does try to. Which, it, you know, the fact that he, like the other day, it was, he wanted me to tell us something about Donovan, which is where his sister lives, and we couldn't understand Donovan. And so he was explaining to us Hastings, and then which we understood, and Grand Island, and it's in between, and like, you know, it, and then it clicked, you know, because, you know, in our part of the country, we know Donovan's there, so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's able to reason things out and stuff, so I'm just wondering if that would be great for him. Well, thank you. I'll do that.
Yeah, bring us results in November.
I don't think that it's really blind related.
No, it's not, but it's a curious thing.
But it's just a curious thing, and I really, you know, if it would help him out, you know, I just think that would be great, too.
Actually, that does bring up a question I have with the speech devices. Does this young man use vision to operate it? So he's
yep.
Low vision?
Yep. Like I say, he has retinitis pigmentosa, so he still has that central vision, and it's still, again, he has one of those syndromes that there's no label for, so they have no idea, and it's retinitis pigmentosa related. Okay, I should have probably qualified that. Okay. It has all the characteristics of that particular eye condition, but, you know, whether or not it's going to progress and deteriorate in the same manner that RP does, who knows?
Yeah, each person that has RP is, I mean, that's one person will maintain vision and another person will lose it quickly, so you never know where that one's going.
But the point that I want to make is some of those devices, most of those devices,
they're very visual.
All of those devices are visual.
Oh, yes.
And so someone who truly was blind and who had no usable vision and who has a speech defect, then it's going to be even more complicated, and we need to work around what's going to work for that person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably would need to go to sign language, I would suspect, or something along that line in order to be, you know,
reading
in a communication.
Have a comment back there and then also up here.
Oh, here, take the mic.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you're on candid camera. Minus Alan Funt.
Record this. Okay, there's a physicist in England, big famous physicist, Stephen Hawking. The guy's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And he has some kind of computer hooked up that can somehow read his eye movements or something like that. I mean, it's really elaborate.
There are a lot of
Things the other comment that I was going to make is if you got funds, Rat Holdaway, you better hide them before Obama grabs them and gives them to Goldman Sachs.
Bird had a comment as well.
Okay, you know, we're right now we're probably still in the board's part, and I really do want to hear the questions and whatever from unless it's technically related. Dan.
It's only related to this, what you were talking about, the device to help the gentleman talk.
Okay.
There's software out there. It's around $100. The same company who makes Text Out Loud makes it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the person would type on the keyboard, it will speak the words for him.
Okay.
Simple to use.
Yeah.
Probably even JAWS compatible.
Yeah. This gentleman, whereas he seems to be, you know, really in tune and he has good vision and stuff, I'm not sure that he's able to read. And I, you know, I'm not sure why that is, if that's, you know, something that occurred before the accident. You know, some people, you know, dyslexic or whatever problems they might have, can't read or weren't taught properly. I don't know that, but it seems to me that I've heard before that, you know, like the hams and stuff, he's not able to read. So I'm not sure, you know, this would work for him, and I just thought, you know, it's worth a shot too. Because he's really trying to make what's left of his life into, you know, unfortunately the accident was a car accident. It was just horrendous, and I really didn't expect him to live at the time. And so, okay, does the board have any more questions? Okay, do you have more to tell us, Pearl, Dan?
Yeah, I wanted to add that often even the service community doesn't know what to do with people with really involved multiple disabilities, and it's typical to kind of write people off as, oh, they could never work, or, you know, that they were way too involved to go to any kind of a training center and so on. But we actually have a gentleman in the training center right now in Lincoln, and I think he's from Scotts Bluff.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't quote me on details, but basically he was not developmentally disabled. He had a car accident of some sort and brain injured, and I think was pretty well shuffled off to live in a nursing home the rest of his days. Mm-hmm. Angie worked just really a lot with him, maybe Dan too, but
yeah,
both of you. Okay, don't want to. But to give credit, both have really done terrific work and worked through, you know, this barrier, then okay, the next barrier, then the next barrier. And the center staff have been very creative too in how can we make our normal approach, the structured discovery approach, does not work with this individual, but what can we do to make this a success? And because he's determined and has a great attitude, because the field staff did their work in getting him to the point of even being able to do involved training like the center, and because center staff is committed to help make it work, it's working. And so we really, a lot of times you have to come up with some very creative approaches to how to make a situation successful for a person. Mm-hmm. So whether he'll go into supported employment, I don't know, but he's certainly kind of typical of, well, actually he's typical of the kind of person that is not eligible for that ongoing developmental disability support because it wasn't a developmental disability. But yet, who may very well need some kind of a job coaching type of an approach.
So those providers, like OHD, those only work with developmental disabilities?
No, they do a lot of different things, but the specific funding for job coaching for supported employment, that's a much more narrow program.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I guess I thought it was anybody that had a need for it.
Wow. Now when it comes to job coaching, and I'm definitely not an expert on how their service system works, so I can't.
Like an accident or mental illness or any other complicate. Do those folks then get services through general funds? And then are there agencies to partner with? Or do they just fall through and?
Yes, no, yes, and yes.
Hey, you got that down?
That was a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Well, she answered them all, didn't she? And she answered them in order, too.
Yeah. I do think it's a fact that the more complications you have in your situation, the more likely it is you will fall through the gaps of the service system.
Oh, that's sad as that.
But I also know that, that there are a lot of good people in all of the service entities, and there's a lot of partnership that happens. Dan mentioned with schools, our staff with schools, our staff with the OHD folks. There's just a lot of partnership and good working collaboration that goes on. So to what extent things can happen for people, I think that professionals out in the field really do try to make it happen.
It is a hard thing because being in the teaching system, I work with a lot of people who work at Voc Rehab, and it's no secret that their turnover rate is fairly high, and it's a lot of it is because they're dealing with hundreds of clients and they try so hard to find places. Like Dr. Van Zandt said, the more complex the disability, the more complex the situation is. If they do have a mental handicap, you know, it's easy to get them into some sort of supported employment. If something happens later in life, yes, they go to voc rehab, but then voc rehab too has to look at what their funding is. Then they have to look at what other agencies, and I know there are some out there, like, but for, you know, mental illness and things, I can't think of any offhand, but just have to keep scratching the surface and mm-hmm. see what you can come up with. That's about all you can do.
Yeah, that's I'm really done with my questions.
Good question.
No, but yeah, that. But yeah, we learned something
that was
you know, really kind of important. That, you know, we all know that sometimes people fall through the cracks that we wish they wouldn't. But it's amazing, you know, that they would make that kind of differentiation between that kind of thing. It's just not right in my book, but
no.
They didn't ask me. So, mm-hmm. Are there any other questions from the board? Otherwise, I'm going to open it up to the public. Hearing that, I'm going to, of course, if you think of something along the way, the board is always free to ask questions. But now, this is the public comment time, and so anybody out there, if you have any questions about this supported employment that we've been talking about, or any questions of we, the board, or our executive director, this is your time. You know, anything that occurs to you, or you wondered about, or something you'd like to tell us, we'd like to hear from you.
Nancy, I have a question.
Please tell me your name.
Karen.
I know, but see, we have to do it for the recording.
Yeah.
And for
actually,
the
also, folks, the microphone is not for
loudness
all
here.
Of us to hear. It's not for loudness, but rather for the tape. So
yeah.
If we can just share that microphone, it will stay on.
So,
thank you.
So that later on, if somebody wants to go on to the website and listen to however many hours this is going to be, they're certainly welcome to. And the other thing is, Kathy Stevens takes minutes, so if you want written minutes that is a little bit shorter, you can do that too. So please, Karen, give us your question.
Okay, I have a question and then just one quick comment, mostly directed at Dr. Pearl here. But the question is, I was curious about the job coaches. Now, do those job coaches, unless, of course, they come from the OHD, would the company that you're working for provide the job coach, or is that somebody that is paid for, in an area that they specialize in, or is it one of the field reps, the poor guys that are overworked in the first place? Mm-hmm. That's my question. And my comment is, Dr. Pearl, I think I know who you were talking about down at the school. And I think he wants to be a tour guide.
Different guy.
Never mind. I did have, Stephen is his name. And Dan, you might be interested in this too. I wrote Fatosh about this because he was down there. But he wants to be a tour guide. And that's what I do, you know, at Fort Robinson. Because of his speech problem, I'm sure that's going to be difficult for him to find a job. However, look at Agate. Because they just lost a person there, okay. Lil Mareva, and they sit in the in a classroom, show a movie, and then the person talks about all these historic things. And the man is amazing what he knows historically. So, I just want to throw that out to you.
Thank you.
Great. Let's see the question about the job coach.
Yeah.
our staff don't technically do job coaching. But we do sometimes, at least not in the official definition of it in terms of supported employment, we do often do job coaching tasks. We'll, let's say you have a new job and you need more than just some basics. Here's your mop. Go clean the floor. You need some coaching along the way. Dan or Angie might go with you for the first, or actually the support staff, our rehabilitation techs, they in some cases do this as well. Go to the new employment site with the client and whatever coaching is needed. Sometimes it's pointing out things that otherwise would be available visually. Here's how you're going to find your supplies or whatever, you know, fits. That's sort of like job coaching, and we do that on occasion. And then we diminish that when that's not needed anymore. But the job coaching itself, that's where we contract with people from these providers, which can be the Goodwills, the Offices of Human Development, there's a place called Employment Works in Norfolk, and you know, a lot of different kinds of things, Rainbow Center in Columbus. Sometimes they're private, not-for-profits, and sometimes they're part of the state system. And so those folks, that's an ongoing job. A person that's a job coach is specifically that, and I don't know if that's too general. If Dan, if you have any more example of how that works. But basically, we contract with them.
Yep. I think you probably covered it as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
I'd like to make a comment.
Okay. Please do.
And it's, this is Dan.
Thank you.
I guess a plug for Karen. How's that?
Good idea.
Did you pay him?
Embarrassing.
I want to see her turn red, maybe. No, she would... She was really active. She's a past school teacher, and I don't have any idea how many years or even if you want to divulge that.
18.
In the Crawford area, I believe. And she was instrumental, along with one or more staff with the commission, in seeing a legislative bill passed past, mm-hmm. whenever it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talk about it, Karen.
I want to embarrass myself. First of all, I'm going to turn the plug around because you guys have an awesome staff out here at Scotts Bluff. You know, I started losing my sight 10 years ago. And just because I didn't want my programs at school to go down, that's really why I retired. Possibly now I could think of ways maybe to reendorse myself in another area and get back into the teaching. But anyway, that's beside the point. Dan and Jan Brandt and Angie and Josie out of this area are unreal and underpaid. Okay, having said that, there you go. Are you red now? LB 449, Dr. Pearl and Carlos and I... went to a very, to me, intimidating hearing to the state legislature. And I really didn't know, probably Dr. Pearl did, but I didn't know how receptive those people were to this. And what the bill was, I was told when I received my disability from teaching, from the Nebraska retirement system, that I could not in any way do anything that had instruction involved in it or teaching. That meant that the programs I was involved with out of Fort Robinson, I'd have to change my title because I couldn't be an instructor. I had to not be able to teach a paid Sunday school class, which I never got paid for anyway, because that was teaching. And so that meant that even though I'd spent all this time in the classroom, I was not able to even go back as a substitute teacher. There's more Nebraska north and west of here, and that's where I live, and there are very, very few jobs available, not just for blind people, but just jobs available. And I wanted to be kind of connected to that classroom. That was my specialized area. So we pursued it, didn't we, Dr. Pearl?
Yes, we did.
Took about 2 years, actually. I mean, from the time I first talked to Dan about it and then Dr. Pearl, and then we got Senator Campbell to produce this bill or introduce this bill. And I got an email from Senator Campbell. And then later, a letter with the signed bill and a congratulations that this bill had been signed that said that teachers now, And it's not just teachers, the way I understand it. It's people who are receiving disability from the Nebraska retirement system may now go back and teach or do whatever they did in their own areas without losing their disability benefits to a limited amount. I can go back and substitute teach for 15 hours a week, which is okay. That's 2 days. You know, I can handle that. I would not be able, I would probably not get enough calls in our part of the country to make up for the disability benefits that I do receive. So that was the whole intention. Social Security doesn't limit me to being able to go out and work in my area, but the retirement system did. So LB 449 was signed by the governor on April 22nd. It will become a law on September 4th, and I'll be, if I can, in the classroom on September 5th. No, actually, I take that back. I'm going to Baltimore from the 2nd of September to the 6th. So on the 7th, I'll be back in. So thank you, Dr. Pearl. Thank you, Carlos. And thank you, Commission, for everything you've done for me. I intend shortly to be one of your success stories.
We know you're going to make it, too. Okay, are there other comments from the public? Anything you'd like to ask us about?
Yeah, this is Frank. I'll second everything that she said about Dan and Angie and Josie. That's it.
That's great.
Thank you.
Well, we knew they were good, but we're glad everybody else out here thinks they're wonderful, too. So this is a good thing.
It takes one to know one.
Ain't that right, Dan?
Yep.
You see?
Okay. Great. Other comments or questions?
Yes, this is Cheryl.
Okay.
And I would third that about Dan and Angie and Josie. It was about 10 years ago I started losing my eyesight. And I was really desperate because I had been a part of my community all my life. And I thought, I'm going to have to go sit in the corner and eat worms.
Yeah.
But they really helped me out of my depression. And I'm still, now right now, although I live in Scottsbluff instead of Kimball, I am able to be a part of my community and do lots of good things as far as I'm concerned. And I thank them for being in the commission and for helping me all that they have.
Thank you. Well, that's wonderful. And then, Dan, have you popped your buttons off yet?
Yeah,
or?
I didn't say that. I don't have a lot of buttons. On.
Well, that was good planning, Dan.
I think he's getting his wallet out now.
I picked the right people. No.
Yeah. No, and you're buying dinner, right, Dan? Nancy, can I make another little? Since we're on this thing,
this is Karen Lemons.
Yes, man. Karen. It's Karen. One of the obstacles that I had when I started losing my sight was dealing with it. And I went clear down in the bucket. I mean, I thought I was an artist of sorts. I considered myself one. I was a musician, and all of a sudden I couldn't do all those things. Well, slowly I decided that what I had to do was take things and accomplish them. And my first project was baking a pie. And it took me about a week before I got one to look right. So I got that done. Well, last year, I did the best thing that I have ever done in my life. I believe this. It made me feel truly independent and have that sense of freedom that we all take for granted. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to come here to tell you guys about this, to spread the word. It's called Ski for Light. I never skied in my sighted life, so why I decided to do this in my blind life, I haven't figured out yet. But Ski for Light in Black Hills is being offered again January 24th to the 30th. And what they do there is they allow people to do this to accomplish something, even though it's something that, not really life skills, but, you know, it's something that makes you feel good, because I went there and I was scared spitless to get those skis on. The ski instructor, what they do is one-on-one. One blind person or one physically challenged person with one experienced skier, and mine happened to be named Bubba. No kidding. And Bubba, I was so scared. He could tell. I was just shaking when he tried to put my skis on me. I was shaking. But I did it. And I actually got a trophy for second place in the last day race. And it wasn't because of my speed, because they challenged you with being consistent. And I was. You couldn't go slower and still go downhill. Bubba skied backwards and I followed his voice. But normally what they do is tether you. And so to pursue this further and to try to give other people the opportunity, this coming year, I talked to some people I've worked with, and you all know them, Fontenelle Tours, who have helped us for the last couple of years get down to National Convention. And they have agreed to cut the cost as far back as they can to pick up blind people and physically challenged people across the state, take them up to the Black Hills. This is all centered out of Deadwood, South Dakota, which is a blast in the first place. and then you can go cross-country skiing or you can go downhill skiing. And you ski every day. It lasts from this year. It's the 24th of January to the 30th of January. And they have a final banquet. The total cost is $350. That includes your lodging, your meals, your ski lift tickets, your ski equipment, and you really can go up there with nothing, unless, of course, you want to go to the One-Armed Bandit. Then it takes a little bit. It takes a lot, actually. But I wanted to promote this to you guys because I think it's important that your field people, Dan's already heard it inside and out, I think it's important that people like me get this opportunity to go and accomplish this little thing that really does mean so much. So if you can somehow help me in that way promote this, I'm going to make sure that we have bus stops coming across the state to pick up whoever wants to come. And I will have applications. I guess probably the smartest time to have them would be at our NFB convention, or you can get them on the internet, and the website is bhsfl.org. That's Black Hills Ski for Light, right? But anyway, I don't know if you guys can help me or not spread this word, but it's certainly an opportunity. And no, we're not making money on this. We just want to have people have that sense
of confidence. Well, you mentioned the NFB convention, but I think it might be, Jim's affiliated with the American Council for the Blind. I would assume your people would enjoy
absolutely
doing
yeah.
that, too.
Yeah.
So it would be, I think any time that blind people can do unexpected things that sighted people do not expect us to do is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, but
because it gets us out there and gets some mind-changing going on.
May I suggest on the break, Jim could provide contact information to Karen, so whatever Karen is sending.
Yeah, okay. I can do that on the break or lunch or what have you. That's fine.
Okay.
Might I also?
I could also. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I could give you my email address and my phone number.
Yeah,
I'm
well,
not shy.
We'll do that during the break or at lunch or what have you. So.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Might I also suggest you talk to an individual by the name of Mitch Green? You have not lived until you skydove.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, skydive. Try that next.
Oh, my. Now you have another thing on my
mind. Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of these things, I think, there are blind people out there that would enjoy doing them, and I think we need to get the word out because it's probably in the same people that would like to do it don't think that they can. And
yeah.
And it's really good to get that information out.
Thank you very much.
Are there other comments?
I would just like to say we always, when we try to, this is Darrell Waller from the board, when we try to set up our meetings in advance, we try to look at making sure we get to other parts of the state, and we decided to go to Wyoming this time. No, just joking.
Kathy and I were going to go to Denver, too, so.
Well, that would be next May.
We're really,
we can fly.
Yes, there's a lot of things going on, but to have the 60 here, you know, in my opinion, and we, you know, we'll discuss these things later, but certainly makes it feel that it's worth our time to come here and to hear what you have to say. And, you know, it's our hope that, you know, at some point we can, you know, come back and have another commissioners meeting here at some point. And I just think it's nice to be able to see people here that really are very interested, and it's great.
Yeah, but try skydiving. That's
I have to agree. I always am so impressed. This last year we went to Columbus, and I was thoroughly impressed with people that came and told us wonderful things about people, the staff from Norfolk and whatever. It's just impressive to me that we are reaching people, and we still know that there are people out there that, I mean, when you start mentioning the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, really? I didn't know there was. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me the people that don't know that, you know, that really do need to know those things, and we need to do what we can to spread the word, because we do have good staff, and we have, you know, people out there that need the help. And what I hear, you know, these multi-handicapped people that are have the will to be and want to be out there and working, it's an amazing thing, and it's a wonderful thing, and makes their life more meaningful, and it gets jobs done that you know, maybe a person with a very high IQ certainly doesn't want to do that job, but the job needs to be done. And so somebody that can do that, that's terrific.
In looking at, you know, we're not coming back like every year or something probably, but you know what I mean? Down the road, if when we look at planning meetings, if we were to come out here or Shadron or somewhere, what we would probably only be able to do that like either the May meeting or the August meeting. So is there a time that would work better, like middle of July or end of July or...
This is Karen again. Mm-hmm. Going to get tired of me.
No, that's why we...
I don't know that the time makes any difference, but for you guys who are donating your time to come out here and get this accomplished, might I recommend Fort Robinson? You could have your own building there, your own meeting center. They could cater meals and that sort of thing. And there I would recommend you do it either in the fall or the spring, after the hubbub of the season is over. I think this is a good time myself, but I think probably more people might be able to attend after the busyness of this summer, in September.
We converse by email and then discuss these down the road, you know, what our plans are. Yeah. It's just good to know some people's ideas.
Fort Robinson, just if you want to know, it's going to cost you about $12 per person per night. I don't know how many of you come in your little group, but you could get one unit that would house 20 with a meeting room and a kitchen and all that stuff. So, and it'd be kind of fun for you. But anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah, but do we like each other that
this
well?
Is Frank. And if you go to Fort Robinson, they cater meals, and Dan ain't going to have to order pizza.
Or Buffalo.
You know, Buffalo is pretty good.
My question about Fort Robinson is, does everybody who attends have to purchase a park permit?
Yes, ma'am.
So that's the drawback about that for consumers coming there. They'd all have to purchase a park permit to get into the park.
But you can use that at any place.
I think all Nebraskans should anyway. I can't argue there. But yeah, they would have to.
You can get a daily pass.
Oh yeah, you can get a daily for $4.
Well, that's something to think about.
Yeah, you know.
Thanks for the ideas.
Yeah, we do appreciate all kinds of ideas, and you know, sometimes and don't think that we never consider them. We do. Sometimes the board moves very slow on things. Sometimes we have to move very quickly on other things. So, you know, it's just one of the ways that things like this work, I guess. Are there other comments? Otherwise, we will go to break for 10 minutes. Okay.
All right.
We're going to break for 10 minutes. Okay. And...
And what do you want us to...
To order now, please.
The Queen has spoken.
Dan, you're ready to go, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
And Pearl's back, and the board
yes,
is
ma'am.
Back, and so we are going to restart. And the next thing on the agenda is the report from the chairman, and that happens to be me. So I don't have a very long report today, but some important things. One of the things was the commission was audited, and during they invited the board to be a part of the audit. And if my memory serves, three of us were there by phone and listened in on the conversation and the explanations by our executive director and our business manager, Bill Brown. And Pearl had good answers for him, but Bill really, you know, that's his field, the budgets and where the money goes and why it has gone and how much money we spent, and did a very fine job with that. And one of the suggestions that they had, and incidentally, we came out, you know, just absolutely fine as far as, you know, nothing to be reported that was terrible. So a few minor things that needed to be handled. But one of their suggestions, and I believe this has been their suggestion for a very long time, is that the board be more involved with the budget, the day-to-day budget, and where the money is going on a day-to-day basis. And we're going to discuss that later. It's an item on the agenda, so I'm going to leave that there. But I just wanted to get it on public record that there were three of us at the meeting by phone, and we were able to ask questions and make comments too, which I think is, you know, helpful. The second thing was our networking group, which is people that get together by telephone to discuss the different aspects of
rehab.
Well, of rehab and that sort of thing, and kind of like bounce off ideas. And if we are, you know, having trouble in one area or another, it was, you know, so that. That's what it was for. And interestingly enough, this time, which our meeting was later than we usually have it, and it happened on a Wednesday, and we usually had it on a Monday evening. And mainly that reason was because there was two advocacy groups, national meetings going on, conventions. And so we had the meeting on July 15th in the evening. And we had some different people, help me out, Pearl. What list was it that got the...
It was the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind has a list of liaisons or partners, other entities that have the same interests. So Helen Keller National Center and the National Center for the Blind in Baltimore, and you know, it goes to a lot of people.
Right, and so we had some different people on the call, and it was a pretty lively discussion, and I'm not remembering a lot of the details of the discussion. I remember that some of these people that had never been on the networking call before were very interested to come back and do it with us again, and I think that can be very interesting. So we'll see where that goes, but I just wanted you to know that it did take place, and it's something that we do usually every other month, unless something is totally important. Like, for example, we did a 1 month thing because of the money we were getting from the government, the unexpected...
The stimulus fund,
yes. Mm-hmm. And so, and how that was going to work out, and and which states might not have gotten it, and which states, and the second half, what kind of hoops they were going to make us jump through to be able to get the stimulus money for the second part and so forth. And it's turning out that that's not going to be as difficult as we thought. At least that's my impression. Nextly, we had interesting things happen with our staff survey that we send out every year, and some things, some people felt like their comments were not submitted, and I, based on the second time around that we did it, I'm sure that was probably true. Some of the comments were the same, but some were not, and so we did the survey a second time. We're going to be discussing some of those comments. It's another item on the agenda. Let's see. We had two people send comments to us from the virtual suggestion box, which is available to staff only. It's not open to the public, but it's open to the staff that they can send anonymous messages to the person who is chair, which right now is me, and then I will send it out to the rest of the board, and then we bring it up to at a public meeting like this, because if there are comments in there that are suggestions that are something that needs to be changed, something that could be improved, or even a good comment or whatever, it needs to be brought up to our executive director so we can handle if there's a problem or get the message out that, hey, we are doing a good job, whatever it might be. We had two of those since the last staff survey, and then I also received a comment just through the regular emails that was sent directly to me, and this staff member, you know, gave me his name and said, he said, you're not going to get the idea across unless, you know, I tell you who I am. So it was John Schmidt that gave me the suggestions, and we will be discussing those three things on the under that agenda item also. And the last thing I want to mention is the Friends of the Commission. I had a chance while I was at an advocacy group convention to talk to Chris Boone, who is the I don't know if her official title is chairman or president of the Friends of the Commission, but anyway, she's the person in charge there now. Interestingly enough, she lives in Michigan, and of course we're in Nebraska, but she is a former staff member of the commission. She is a former resident of the state of Nebraska, obviously, and so she talked to me briefly, and then I also got the minutes from the Friends because they had met, she by phone, the rest, I don't know, maybe there were some other people that were by phone too, but they all got together and discussed, and they are going to change some bylaws, so it's going to make it easier for people to do things. Now, one of the things she suggested to me is just kind of like a comment that she said, you know, sometimes there are, you know, if the staff is working with a client, the client's family might say, oh my gosh, you've done such a wonderful job. And we've heard that a lot today, that, you know, the staff does a good job out in this area. That, you know, sometimes family says, I'd like to do something. I'd like to donate some money. And Chris's suggestion was just, she said, in that kind of a case where they're bringing it up and they're saying, you know, I'd like to donate some money, that, you know, maybe they can say something like, you know, a good place to donate that would be the Friends of the Commission, because they help the commission out with different things. So she isn't saying that they need to promote it and say, you know, would you like to donate some money? No, but if they bring it up, you know, and I'm sure the staff already knows this, but it doesn't, you know, hurt to reinforce this because, you know, sometimes the family feels like this blind person, their relative, can't do anything else, and when they find out that they can still live on their own, still go to do a job, be out in the public, whatever, that they are so grateful that they really would like to donate some money because of all the help their relative has received. So that was one of her suggestions, and I'm confident now that they're going to be meeting on a very regular basis, and I look forward, you know, my little bit of time that's left in being chairperson and the time that I have left just being on this board, that, you know, we'll hear other good things from the Friends of the Commission, because I know they can do good work. And that is my report for today. So we'll go on to the next item.
May I just interject something before we move on?
Sure.
I just want to apologize. It is not our chairman's fault. We just realized that if checkout is at 11, we should probably pack, and I should have asked for a little extra break time. But we're okay now, and we're ready to go. We had to change some travel plans due to some unforeseen circumstances, so sorry about that, and I guess we did schedule an hour for lunch, so we're probably not too far off.
No, and I was, you know, when I mentioned that to you and Jim, I was just teasing you.
Oh, I know.
Because you guys are always giving me a bad time about... You know, that I run long meetings, but I really like to hear from everybody, and I want to give everybody a chance to talk, and so I put up with their nonsense for a while, so I'm going to give them a little bit of it back.
Speaking of long presentations, now we're going to one. Oh, just kidding.
I think that's grounds for removal.
Moving right along, we are going to go to reports from the Executive Director, Pearl Van Zandt.
See, we have fun as a board, guys.
Yeah,
we tolerate
Thank
each other.
Thank you. We have two people have joined us, and at the beginning we always do introductions.
Oh, sure.
Not to put you ladies on the spot, but would you introduce yourself and spell your last name, please?
And you need the mic.
Diggin. Yeah.
My name's Sarah Gunther, G-U-N-T-H-E-R, and I'm Alisa Gunther's daughter. And I am not visually impaired.
But we're happy to have you with us.
I'm Alisa Gunther, it's G-U-N-T-H-E-R, and I guess former client of... It used to be services for visually impaired.
So,
and I work for Regional West Medical Center as a financial liaison in the financial assistance department.
Great.
Wonderful.
Thank you for coming.
Yes. Now we know where to go for financial assistance.
All right. Well, I will also try to be somewhat brief. There's always so much to tell and never do get it all told, but... A more in-depth report will be in the minutes. But there's lots that we've been doing. First of all, the governor's awards each year. The governor establishes an employee of the year and a supervisor of the year. And it's actually given in, it's a ceremony in October, but the nominations go in the spring, and so I can announce to you that our employee of the year is Dottie Wilmot in the Lincoln office, and she's just really done a terrific job with our new case management system, which it's huge. It would take me all morning, and I still wouldn't, you know, scratch the surface, but she's done a fabulous job. And then Supervisor of the Year is Bob Deaton, who, along with Carlos Servan, has been supervising the North Platte District Office, and some of the staff nominated Bob for the good job that he's doing in spite of all, on top of all of his other normal duties as deputy. He's always available to the staff and, you know, very supportive of helping folks get their jobs done, and so he's our Supervisor of the Year this year. We did submit the state plan to the feds, the Rehab Services Administration, in June, as you will recall, and then we had notification that we needed to make changes. So that did all happen as of Thursday, and it was resubmitted. I have it here with me if anybody wants to look through this document. So we're pleased to have that done. We don't know yet if there will be any more changes that the federal people will tell us to make. We hope not. We hope it's good. I have sent it to the board, so there really isn't anything that would have changed an approval. I mean, that's like new, and it's nothing different, but it's the way they wanted the information and so on. I did want to give you an update on Outlook Nebraska, which is in Omaha. We've been kind of continuing to monitor. They do continue to hire people. They have some training staff that are visually impaired, or low vision, I guess you'd say, to run some of the machines. They are telling us that they will hire team leads that are blind. I'm not sure if they've done that yet or not, but and they will get some new machines in October with speech output, so hopefully that'll open some jobs for people. It's interesting, the Iowa Blind Agency does send quite a few people to Outlook for tours, and they do consider it to be a successful employment option. They really still are not integrated employment, and that's a requirement for competitive employment. So we're checking further at the national level to see, you know, what the federal people think. If Iowa Blind is calling it successful closure, why is that, and what's different in how they look at it versus we're looking at it? And to our knowledge, they still are working in resolving the job safety issues. So,
Pearl, can I ask very quickly, and maybe my view on this whole thing is wrong, but and maybe this is the wrong terminology, is sweatshop employment considered successful closure? And why?
Yeah. Well, the sweatshop.
I don't know if I use that.
No, that's not a.
I mean, that's how I view that employment
term. Sure, that's a more workshop.
We don't call it that.
I'm blanking out on the term. But work settings, workshop. There's another word with that. What is the word?
Sheltered workshop.
Thank
sheltered,
you.
Yeah.
Oh,
you.
Yeah.
Sheltered
workshop.
Maybe
that's a better way of saying sweatshop.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's better.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, so no, sheltered workshops are not considered successful employment placements. The National Industries for the Blind, which have kind of traditionally been thought of as sweatshops and sheltered workshops, because they employ blind people, they can get federal contracts to make everything from equipment for the military to pink rollers to, you know, all kinds of things that they can get contracts. National Industries for the Blind has worked very hard over a number of years to change at least the perception of what they are, and they say, we're not your father's workshop anymore. That's kind of their tagline now. But they do some management training, and there's a lot of controversy about it, Jim, whether it really is the work people could aspire to or not. The federal regulations in the Rehab Act about what employment is requires to be competitive employment, it has to be integrated, and that is that it's not just people with disabilities or blind people that work there. And if there's, you know, it can't be just we employ all people but the blind people are over in this corner only doing this little job. There has to be opportunity for the blind and otherwise disabled people to do, if not all, at least a wide range of the jobs available at the facility. Okay. And they have to pay competitive wages and things like that. So, and they have to have opportunity for advancement. And so you have to look at all of those things, and a workshop one place is going to be different from somewhere else. Okay. But I hope that helps.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The big thing we've been spending our time on these days, called the stimulus funds, or ERA, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. The agency did get a lot of money from ERA that we're able to spend. We still have to spend them on the same kinds of things that are allowed under the Rehab Act, like work things that will help clients achieve employment, or, you know, it has to fit within our normal scope of business. And so we have had a lot of work to do to learn how the reporting of the spending is heavily regulated at the federal level. And so I spent almost all of 1 week attending webinars to learn about the regulations. So it's rather complex, but you know, that's a good thing. We should be accountable for the funds. And so we've got lots of ideas that in a way kind of blend into our normal business, because it has to be our normal business, as I said. But the ERA funds are allowing us to do some things that we otherwise just wouldn't have the money to do. Pardon me. That's been time-consuming, but it's also exciting. We've done lots of discussions in office meetings and at the district and state level about things that we can do with the funds. And I think we've got a lot of good ideas. We finished wages, of course, is in the summer. That's the youth employment program. We had 14 participants this year, and provided training to the staff in the center for 2 weeks. We've never done that before. And
the wages staff?
Yes.
Training? Okay.
Yes. Temporary. We've always hired temporary staff to, like, supervise the dorm and things like that. But we've been noticing that, you know, if they just come in and don't know anything about blindness, they really give a different message than what our staff would give. So at least with 2 weeks in the training center, they have an opportunity to learn about high expectations and to learn about structured discovery, you know, not just handing the student the bar of soap, but helping them figure out where they might logically find a bar of soap, things like that. And so I think that was very good. That's an example of something we spent the ERA money on, because, you know, gives us 2 extra weeks of training, 7 people, I think, I'm not sure. You know, it all adds up. So, that was good. A number of our staff attended a workshop, actually a series of workshops called Bridges Out of Poverty, and we partnered with the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency to bring this speaker in from Minnesota. It was really very good. Dan, did you attend the first part? Okay. But there were staff from all the districts who attended at least one, if not both, of the workshops. It gave us a lot of good ideas for having effective skills for working with people. We've had people get lots of good jobs. Before I got into the jobs, I wanted to tell you the, as you know, all the county fairs are going on, and we had two center clients enter food in the Lancaster Fair. One placed third, and so that was pretty neat. And then another one didn't place, but he gave it a great effort, and so it's really nice to have those accomplishments. The kinds of jobs people got this year from all around the state, a plants manager, a chemistry and math instructor, ranch operator, a tractor mechanic, food preparation and dishwasher, house cleaner, substitute teacher, thanks to Karen Lemon's good work with the legislature, telephone interviewers, a scanner, a vendor at the military, at the National Guard unit at Ashland, training and custodial at the Department of Corrections. We've done some internships. One is as a case aide at Health and Human Services. Two were in our offices teaching Braille and technology skills. And then also we're working on an internship with People's City Mission to package coffee beans. And then some other jobs with food service, special education teacher, customer service, production, and sales representative. So those are just some of the jobs around the state that people are getting, that clients are getting. In the center, we always track, I always report our results of how many we've served since 1996, which is when we started this tracking. We've served 168 people in the center. And at this point, 89.5% of those people did achieve their employment goals. And so, of course, some are still in training or in, like, college or students elsewhere. So only 8.3% of the total are really not working or not in any further kind of training. Field services, so far this year, we've served 513 vocational rehabilitation clients. 36 have been closed successfully, achieving their employment goals. And we've served 661 independent living clients, with 170 being closed successfully. We've had group training programs in all of the districts. The FYI is for your independence. That's actually going to be in September. Is that right, Dan?
There was also one in the spring.
Okay, yes.
Two a year.
We had one already, and there's another one that's being planned right now. And then that's in North Platte.
Right.
In Lincoln, we have what's called GATE, and we've had that. That's kind of, we'll do a new one starting in August. And then Omaha has what's called, they have TABS, which is for youth, and they have another one that's for seniors that they've had recently. Also, a very great opportunity for an event occurred thanks to Cheryl Poff's good work. There's a walking bridge that goes across the river from Nebraska to Iowa. And Helen, this summer was the 50th anniversary, am I saying that right, of Helen Keller's 150th.
She's not that young.
Yeah, she's not that young. Anyway, Helen Keller's birthday. Anyway, Cheryl Poff imagined how wonderful it would be for deafblind people from Nebraska to walk east and deafblind people from Iowa to walk west and join in the middle. It was a great event. The media covered it. There were a lot of people attending, and it just really was a terrific event. And so that was neat. We're just very busy. The business office, Kathy and Dave and Bill and Dottie are very, very busy. We've been through the audit. There are just a lot of things. We do have one position open right now, and we had one person retire in this past quarter.
Is the retired position going to be reopened?
The person that retired, Bob Shanklin, was in the Lincoln office. We've actually moved that position to Omaha, and
Oh, okay. So
we'll be opening a rehab counselor. Well, it's already open. A rehabilitation counselor position has been open. It'll be open till August 19th, I believe, for the Omaha office.
I thought that was open as a result of Kathy moving up.
Well, it was. It's kind of a chain of events. The legislature provided us with funds to hire a orientation counselor specifically for older blind people. We put that in Omaha, and Cheryl Poff applied and was, you know, given that position. It's not a promotion. It was a lateral change, but it'll be different focus for her. Then Kathy Brown Hollins applied for the orientation position that Cheryl had exited, and was moved into that position. And so Kathy, who had been a voc rehab counselor, her position becomes open. And in Lincoln, there was the retirement, but also in the previous year, I forget which month, but we had eliminated a supervisory position in the North Platte District and basically created a field staff position
Okay. In
Lincoln.
So balanced out.
So it's kind of a long story, but that's kind of how it all fell, the domino effect.
Yeah. What are the long-term plans for the supervisor position in North Platte area?
Long-term, we would like to recreate the position and hire for that. At present, it's really working quite well the way it's being managed. So we've got so much else on the fire, it seems like better to keep that as it is for now. And
so I'm just thinking staff to clients. Was that supervisor position, did they have a caseload? I don't remember.
They did have a caseload, but that has been able to be handled.
Oh, because
quite
Jamie went from full-time to full-time.
Right. Yeah. We had a half-time. And also remember several years ago when we had layoffs, there were, you know, that kind of distributed around things a little differently too. So,
but there's still the same amount of staff hours to clients out there. I mean,
yes.
It's covered adequately for the time being. Okay.
Right. And we really keep an eye on that too. There's lots more that I could talk about, but I really think, I should mention the upcoming business conference. The placement committee has been planning. It's going to be at the end of September at Mahoney Park, September 29th and 30th. It's partly focused at, pardon me, clients and partly at business people or employers. We'll have some excellent speakers. We'll have really some good opportunities for learning, and hope that people will attend that. There's going to be a $25 registration fee, but it really is going to be a good workshop. There will be more details on that in the minutes. So that's exciting. People have really been working hard on that.
That's a Tuesday, Wednesday.
So there you go. That's
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pearl.
You're welcome.
The board have other questions of Pearl? I'm really excited to see, you know, I think Cheryl Poff has done such an excellent job, you know, not that others haven't, but working with the deaf blind and getting advocacy things going and, getting them out in the public and doing things which, you know, to me, could be very difficult. And I'm really excited to see what she will do with the senior blind now.
Yes.
If I read that ad correctly for the Omaha posting, and I do read some of these things, by the way, it said in there that you needed to have a bachelor's degree. Is that right?
I believe so.
I also thought I heard the word master's being read. Is that also?
I think that's preferred, or it's desired but not required.
So if you have someone from another agency that works out state applies that has, I think the individual has the bachelor's but not the master's. Okay. Obviously, she'll be considered and given the interview and so on and so forth. They won't automatically be disqualified because they don't have the master's. Mm-hmm. As far as the interview process.
The last thing you said is correct. I won't say that they would automatically get an interview, but they certainly would come into the pool. People do have to apply through the state personnel.
Right.
They can't just send a resume to me.
Right.
They do have to apply through there. And then there's a whole state personnel system. And then, so yes, most likely that person would rise to the level of interviews, but you can't say for sure because
you don't know the
mix of all the
the
resumes, the applications that come in, and then there's steps it goes through. But
so if somebody had to fly in from out state, for example, I assume that expense would be their expense to cover airfare, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I don't know that we can go into that kind of detail in the media. It's not a set in stone thing, but that would be. Sometimes we've interviewed people, done a telephone interview first.
Okay.
There have been times when the agency has paid for the cost to travel, and other times that the agency does not. It really kind of varies.
I understand circumstances and that.
Right.
So, yeah. All right.
That's my report. Thanks,
folks. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? Okay, now it's public comment time. That's your guys' turn again. And you can, anything from my report or Pearl's report, obviously, or anything else that you would like to bring up, it's your turn. And if you have things you'd like to tell us, we'd like to hear them, or questions that you have.
Karen Lemon, I have questions.
Okay, Karen.
Of course.
I was wondering what the outcome of the March 4th, I think it was, hearing to cut the budget for retired folks. Does anybody know what happened there? I never really...
To cut the budget for retired folks.
Yeah, when there was a whole bunch of people there. That was a day after the hearing for LB 449.
Oh, that was funding for older blind, wasn't it?
It was what?
Funding for older blind, wasn't it?
Yes. And I thought it was involved with the commissions. I just wonder what the outcome of that hearing was.
Okay. If you're... Oh, did you want me to...
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Please. You know more about it than I would, I'm sure.
Okay. If you're talking about the Appropriations Committee hearing...
Right.
Okay. Then, and the... That... there's always... every agency has to go through a hearing with the Appropriations Committee about their overall budget. Mm. Now, a big part of what we were stressing this year was the needs of older blind people and the need for the state to pony up more funds to enable us to serve those people better. We also were there for our whole budget. I mean, we wouldn't want them to say, sure, that's a great idea. This whole amount we give you, serve older blind people, because then that wouldn't allow us to do our employment-focused work. But it turned out well. This was a year of course, many states going bankrupt or nearly, and a lot of cuts in practically every state. Our state has, because of it's been pretty conservative fiscally, has managed to, we're not in as dire straits as a lot of state governments, but the governor still was really stressing, we don't want to get there. we don't want to go down that path. So agencies, he said to us, don't ask for more money, tighten your belts, do, you know, do more with less, and so on. Our budget, we did get, as I said earlier, additional money for the senior blind program. We didn't get our full request, but we weren't cut from our last year's budget. So given what happened to other agencies, we were very successful.
Thanks.
Yes.
Okay. Frank, I just got one comment. You may in your committee hearings point out to them that this is one of the few agencies that actually does something useful, because you're taking people who would normally be just be chucked in the dustbin and kicked over to the curb and putting them in the workforce where they are working and paying taxes.
Exactly.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, their food stamp program or something like that that gives, I guess, the new definition of a nanosecond is the span of time it takes for an illegal alien to walk into the human services office and walk out with a book of food stamps. That wastes money. You guys actually make the state money. I would strongly point that out to
Thank you. We definitely do point out the return on the investment for the VOC rehab, and actually for every dollar invested, you really get $6 comes back to the economy for vocational rehabilitation services. So, you know, aside from comments about the value of other programs and things, definitely we do make the point of the value, you know, because most people don't think blind people can work or contribute or raise a family or do any of those things that we know are really valuable. So, yes, we definitely do.
Yeah.
Actually, that does remind me, Frank, of a bill that has passed that I should mention. So I'm glad you mentioned that. The legislation, the state legislature passed a bill that will require all agencies, all entities that provide benefits to people to do certain steps to assure that people served are legally in the country. So that will be something that begins October 1st, and so of course we will be doing that. Bill and Dave and I think Kathy as well are attending some training on how that will work. So that'll be in place soon.
That is very interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
I was also just going to say, if you are free to use my new definition of a nanosecond in your next committee hearing.
It's on the recording for posterity.
Or until the web goes down.
I can't wait for the federal agents to break my door down.
So let's
okay.
Move on.
Yeah, are there any other questions or comments from the public, or otherwise we'll move on to the next. Okay, hearing none, we're set to go to old business now. And the first update we have is for the budget.
All righty. Basically, we're on target with our budget expenditures. We are spending more than normal, but we have the additional money for the ERA. So we should be spending more than normal. The purpose of ERA is to
stimulate
funds into the communities. So that we're doing that.
You're helping.
We're doing our best to spend money and really working at getting people jobs and getting good things done. Let's see. Reallotment, you may recall, is something that happens each year. Some state agencies are not able to either match all of the federal rehab funds available, and so if you can't match it, you can't have it. And other agencies just don't you know, can't use all the funds that are available. So each August, there's a little ritual that the states that can't use or can't match all of their federal funds turn that money back, and states who would love to have more money ask for reallotment funds. So we have requested, we figured out, you know, to make sure that we could match these funds and that we wouldn't get into any technical difficulties. We've requested $625,000 for basic support, that's the vocational rehabilitation part, $100,000 for older blind, and $35,000 for the Part B, the independent living. Now, I will tell you, most of the time we request the maximum we can think of that we could get, and we usually get, you know, a few thousand. So yeah, don't think we'll have 800,000 coming in here soon. But we hope to get a little bit. And we'll know, I believe, by the end of, might be mid-September that we hear. And this is all at the federal level, so we don't know. But I wanted you to know we've mm-hmm. requested that. And I brought some specific reports and things that I think we'll talk about more in the section on the auditor's suggestion.
Okay.
But I have all kinds of detailed sheets if you have specific questions about the budget.
Okay.
I'll attempt to answer.
Okay.
Anyone?
Anybody have questions on the board? See, we just all think that you do, and
exactly.
Bill Brown do such a wonderful job, and I mean that sincerely. It's
thank
not being,
you.
Because you look at how Bill Brown fills out things and crunches the numbers, so to speak. It's amazing to me. I could not do his job. I would never want to do his job. He's just absolutely amazing with how he handles that. Okay.
Thank you.
If there are no more questions there, and I hear none, so we will go to the NIS update.
Okay. We still have issues with some of the screens that really do not read well in with JAWS, and they keep working on it and getting some changes, and then we just learned that the next version of NIS, that's the Nebraska Information System,
yeah,
is due out in December. And
oh,
every
great.
Time there's a new version of NIS, then it's not that they don't fix some of the old problems, but there's always new problems
they make
that
new
come
ones,
up.
Yeah. Wow.
And the other issue is then there are new versions of JAWS mm-hmm. along the way, and
right.
so they aren't necessarily, if NIS people fix some aspects to work with JAWS, then it was, of course, the version of JAWS that they knew about at the time. So it really is an ongoing problem. To some extent, NIS works all right with JAWS. I believe that as far as the self-service part, when the employees have to go into NIS to get their pay, you know, their timesheets or their, pay stub and enter their insurance stuff, we just went through that recently. And I didn't hear any loud screams, so I'm looking at Kathy. Did it work pretty well for people?
I think for the most part it worked pretty well with people. If someone
okay.
had any questions, they were pretty minor, and Dave or I could walk them through the screens.
Thank you.
Over the phone.
Yeah. One of the things that is a challenge is that even with, if you're using Sight, if you only go to NIS once a year to do your health insurance, you have problems. You know, it's a complicated system, and so sometimes a JAWS user goes to it once a year and has terrible problems, and then it seems like it's because of JAWS. Well, it's probably just because NIS, and if you don't use it very often, it doesn't work very well. So we really do keep trying to address that. But I know we'll probably have more problems in December. So we'll just, but we are getting, the people downtown have said to us, give us the details of what isn't working right now. And they do have a tester that's a UNL student. So, you know, we're working on that.
I have to ask a question out of ignorance, I guess. Why can't the state, whoever manages NIST, hire someone like Jonathan Ross to, you know, script all of that? Or is it just such a huge system that that would be almost impossible?
I don't know the answer to that. When Wes Majerus left the state, we really encouraged them to hire another person to do what he was doing. And instead they opted to have a student do some testing. So
That was not surprising.
That was disappointing.
Okay. So you answered my question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else on this or whatever?
Did she have something?
She answered it.
Okay.
Okay, so the next item is the NFB Newsline report, and Jamie did send us her information and told us of the new features and the new things you're going to be able to do. One of them I found real interesting, because I am a Husker football aficionado, that you could go to, you know, various newspapers and just download onto your MP3 that I'm not into. I haven't done that kind of thing yet. But if you can, if you're one of your these tech people, that you could get all the sports report from Lincoln, Omaha, you know, wherever it's covered, and just have that and not have the whole newspaper. But that was interesting. And she gave us the stats and so forth.
Does the full report show up in the minutes? I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah.
Very good. So that'll be available.
Yeah, it is. It is there, and it's interesting. So, if there aren't any questions about that, we will go on to the client's assistive program complaints or issues.
And client assistance program is the entity to which clients or applicants can go when they have problems with the agency or agency decisions and so on. And this past quarter there was none. So no report.
Right.
That's a good report.
That is a very good report.
And that's the quickest thing we've done so far.
And I don't, you know, I don't know what questions we might have about that. Okay, then we will go on to, I believe we're down to new business now. And the first report here is from the Committee on Attending Advocacy Conventions, State Conventions.
That is Julie.
Okay, Julie, take it away.
She just got elected.
I feel very unprepared. We were discussing the commission paying for commissioners to attend consumer conventions or other related opportunities in the state and on the national level. And sort of the way that we feel that commissioners should have that opportunity, because it's a good time to meet Nebraskans, you know, that need our services, and, you know, network with them, get some feedback, you know, what they like, what they don't like, different ideas, and also, you know, to let them know that we're here to listen to them. And then on the national level, I don't know, we didn't discuss this, but me personally, I think it's a good opportunity to see what other states are doing, to get some ideas, to have those opportunities on a larger scale, get, you know, more input from different sources. So with all of that, Daryl, Jim, and I felt that commissioners should receive all expenses paid to attend state and national consumer or other related conventions or trainings. But we also felt that there should, it shouldn't be a complete free-for-all. That's financially irresponsible. So we kind of, after reviewing several different
options,
ways of limiting that, we decided that probably the easiest and most straightforward was to say that each commissioner per term, so in a four-year time span, could attend two state conventions or other state, like the Nebraska City Group or the Group in Omaha or a VIPS convention or something of like a weekend nature. So two in-state events and two national events in the four-year time. So,
and by national, we included, you know, things like the NC...
ASB, yeah, that one.
You know, any of those, unless that would be funded differently, but we didn't want to just say limited to the consumer groups, because I know there's so many things that, you know, nationally and things in blindness training and so forth that are...
Excuse me.
That's on record now.
Really important to attend, and, you know, we're... Yes, even me, I'm frantically working on completing my modules here. So we want to you know, get involved in, you know, as much as this as we can. And I think it's something that we felt would, you know, certainly not be a waste of money. And we all really, you know, the three of us really agreed without, you know, any major discussion, but I'm sure, you know, that's why we want to bring it before, you know, as a board, and we discuss some other things, or maybe Pearl knows some things that we can and can't do, and, you know, so forth, with budget restraints and so forth.
For the record, let me give a little bit of background why this came up. I was the one that instigated this several years ago when I was out there where a lot of you folks are, when we had another board, and the board at the time, you know, the agency was just, you know, had been moved from the Department of Health and Human Services to its own entity, if you will, and the board at the time felt that funding wasn't there and so on and so forth. So, and those people in this room that know me know that I like to kind of instigate things and keep pressure on, and so I'm the result of this, bringing this to the body today. It is a good way for, you know, Julie, Carol, myself, and whoever else, to get out and network and socialize, et cetera, and find out what's on people's minds and what have you.
And people are not required. Commissioners, we're not requiring them.
Right, to attend anything, but the maximum would be.
Strongly encourage.
Yeah.
I have one question about the whole thing is, for example, you know, it's obvious that certain people on this board are affiliated with one advocacy group and some from the others. And I'm really glad you included the NCSAB. I think that's a worthwhile thing for commissioners to attend. I had the opportunity, and I know Daryl did, and we both felt that it was a good thing. But, you know, my concern is that, you know, the one national convention that they choose to attend will be the one that they already plan to go to, or the state convention that they already plan to go to. I really feel if this is going to happen and it's, you know, feasible and so forth, that it should be made an effort to attend something that you don't already intend to, I mean, something that you're affiliated with.
Could we limit it to that you can't repeat, so that if you, the first year you go to an ACB convention, then your next slot would have to be used for something different?
Right.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. And to try to, you know, maybe include things that are, you know, like these other things, like NC, I know that you mentioned that, but to make that, you know, kind of a priority too. But I have no problem with people going to, I think,
everybody needs to expand their horizons, and going to these other conventions and getting to know other people is not a bad idea. You get a different perspective. It may not change your mind at all, but you get a different perspective. You get to hear from people you ordinarily maybe would not hear from.
Oh, it is. It's awesome.
Before Pearl jumps in, I want to make this comment, and I want it on public record, that I would not ask, because of my own whatever, I would not ask the agency to pay my expense for the ACB National Convention.
No, but I just
think...
And
that's my choice. Well,
yeah.
I wouldn't do it.
What I'm saying is I just think that should be part of the thing, because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could look at
You know, and I don't... I'm anxious to hear from what Pearl has to say about this.
Thank you. And the pizza guy just came, so I had to... I may have missed just a little bit of that to pay for this pizza. I have a couple of questions. When, you know, the statute that established the commission allows for the board to be paid a $70 per diem when they do the work of the commission. So, say for this meeting, the expenses were paid for commissioners to get here, to stay here, and meals as well, plus a $70 for the one day of the meeting. Are you suggesting that your attendance at these other meetings would be, quote, the work of the board, and that you would get that per diem as well? Or are you suggesting expenses to be paid?
We thought that we weren't asking for the per diem, I guess.
Just the expenses.
Right, just the expenses.
Okay. And I don't know if that'd be legal or not, but...
I think that's good. I really think that makes the most sense. The per diem amount is really for when you all as a group are doing your business.
The board business.
So, we were kind of on the same page on that.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure.
No, that's
okay.
Good.
Is this something that we would need to vote on as such to make it or do we really need to write down in policy, you know, a paper that we can absolutely do?
I would say that it's within the scope of the agency to pay for board members to attend a meeting, just like when one or others of you have gone to the National Council of State Agencies with me. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the right for you to say, yes, I want to go, and for us to say, yes, we can afford to send an extra person this year. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we would have the right to begin paying expenses for you to attend the state and local conventions. But I think, you know, because what I hear you saying is that you want a specific allowance within a four-year term, the way you said it, that it would be best to have a motion and, you know, to have an actual vote on the record up to that amount. Of course, not
right.
Required.
And I think we also need to limit if the budget changes and that's no longer feasible.
Ah, good idea.
Then, mm-hmm.
Well,
then
that can be part of the
motion. It's no longer an option.
Yeah, so I'm wondering. Excuse me, Carol. I'm just going to say one thing first. I personally would feel better about the whole thing if it was wrote down. You know, da 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 da.
Yes.
Two, and it has to be this, and if the commission cannot afford that, that is the underlying factor there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first job of the commission is to serve clients.
Right.
So I would be happier if we could be totally wrote down all of the ideas, possibly sent around to in between time, and everybody saying, well, I like this, I like that, but could we add this? And having a consensus and the paper, and maybe doing the vote in next.
I think we need to do it that way.
I would be willing to write it up, since we may have another job for Julie down the road.
That's funny.
I would be willing to write that up and share it with Julie and Jim and, well, everybody.
I think you ought to share it with the whole...
everybody, every commission.
Everybody,
yeah,
and everybody can put input. Now,
yeah, you're
you
right.
Guys have...
Yeah, it doesn't take the... Yeah, you're right.
The bottom work and stuff and got it, you know, going here. Then
that's
I think
what I
we all
to
need
say,
to do.
Sorry.
But I would like to see it voted on. And I think Julie's right. She just mentioned that we can't, with it being a new thing, we can't really vote on it this time anyway. I think there's a rule, something about that.
I don't think there is.
So I don't know, and I really stepped on Carol's feet here, so I'd like to hear her input too.
I understand I'd want to see specifics, and I'd like to see a dollar, like a max dollar amount set, because, you know, location of where conventions are makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Like plane tickets, either you can fly or you can drive, you know,
that's a good point.
Food is more expensive. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even like when clients get sent to conventions, usually like, okay, here's X amount of dollars, that's your, you know, tickets, whatever, bought, and then you get this much for food, and if you go over that, that's your own responsibility. Okay. Any extras?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also, like, I don't know, I feel being the NFB designee that it's just a free ride for me. I can go to a national and state convention, woohoo, free trip.
Yeah, I'm not very comfortable.
That's why I would strongly encourage you not to take it.
Right, and we discussed the representatives from NFB and ACB being exempted from being paid to go.
I think that should be an option. That's not very fair.
And that's the way I felt too. Mm-hmm. And we discussed that quite lengthy discussions about that.
So yeah, and I really think it should. You know, if you are a part of an advocacy or a given organization, you should really, you know, avoid. I wouldn't say it can't be done, but avoid, you know, doing that one as one of the ones that you get paid. So
just because there's other mechanisms,
and it should always, and it should also be a report from the people. I mean, if whoever it is that attends, they should come back with a report. I attended this committee meeting, that committee meeting, that group, this group. I was at general sessions, and this is what went on, and blah blah blah. Because we're not, you know, nobody on this board right now would do this. But, you know, there may come a time when somebody might attend something and just go and have party time. And I have nothing against party, and, you know, after the sessions are over or whatever, great, go party. But that should not be the top priority. And like I said, nobody on this board would do that. But, you know, it needs to be put down there in writing. I just would feel more comfortable with that.
Well, I volunteer to write something up and share it with the group by Tuesday.
Okay, I think I will take the privilege and say that Daryl should write it up.
I do want to make a couple of comments.
So do I. Go ahead.
The whatever you decide, do recall that the meal aspect of it, the state will only pay certain amounts, and it is based on the location. And you do have to have receipts and details.
Right.
But if, you know, if you spend more than whatever it is for breakfast, you get, you know, the state allows to pay for certain amounts. I may not be saying it quite right, ready for lunch. But anyway, that's all very, very much regulated.
Right.
And so if it is decided that the agency, funds permitting, will support the attendance of commissioners at, however you want to word it, understand that there are requirements within how we can pay for, especially meals, but also like with transportation, and if a person flies, Kathy sets that up and goes, finds the most reasonable, you know. So those are the kinds of things.
Sure.
Even as you write your motion, that some of those are givens.
And see, that was the thing I was going to suggest to Carol. I didn't necessarily agree with the dollar amount limitation necessarily until Pearl indicated what she just did.
Mm-hmm.
So I can live with that. I mean, for us just to say an arbitrarily dollar amount, I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But as long as we follow the guidelines that the agency uses, I have no problem with it.
Okay.
I think the pizza's getting cold. I think we could, if we need to, we can pick this up. I think we've really covered it.
I think we're done.
Okay, so I think instead of going to executive director's goals, I think we will go to lunch instead.
Sounds good.
Well, I have my work cut out for me between now and Tuesday.
Well, Dale, you better make sure you.
I'll share everything with all of you.
Well, okay. Make sure you run spell check.
I do. Oh, I hate it when you go on these lists and people.